Chapter 9. Some Small Paradise. Mericus. Light Song. Sothopolis was a dusty city, set on the plain between the sea and the rising lands of the interior. 8 parallel streets running along the coast, 8 others crossing them, and that was pretty much all of it. The smallest iteration of an ultramar urban grid, Sothopolis was still too big for the population living there. Consequently, much of its footprint was unoccupied by people or buildings. The centre looked impressive, but 2 streets away from the squat Imperial Adepta precinct, empty lots abruptly took over, framed by ferrocrete roads that would not see the shade of a building, not in Mericus Giraldus's time. The city omnibus stopped with a hiss of air brakes. Chain-link fences around the empty lots chinked in the soft sea breeze. The omnibus halt was right at the edge of town. A field of tall cereals began on one side of the road. A square of scraped-down earth waited for the buildings of the future on the other. Mericus climbed down out of the cool interior of the vehicle, dragging his army field sack and rifle with him. He was dressed in dappled camo fatigues, the sole passenger on a vehicle designed to carry 100. The lack of passengers would not stop the timetable, not in Rabute Gilliman's realm. The omnibus ran as regularly as Macragian clockwork, doing a circuit of the tiny city every hour before heading off to the landing fields 10 kilometres away, coming back by the Ægida Castellum on the mountain slopes, through the fields and the forest edge of Odessa, as equally gridded and well-ordered as the young settlement, in case anyone needed to come back from their work early. They never did. The only times the omnibus was at full capacity was when it took the agri workers out and when it brought them back. Transporting them all took 3 journeys, each timetabled and executed to the second. The remainder of the day, the bus trundled round and around the streets, almost always empty, the servitor driver's black glass eyes fixed forever forward. Mericus rode it sometimes on his monthly day off. It was hypnotically soothing and a good place to think, but only if the weather was bad, and it rarely was bad on Sotha. Behind Sothopolis, the ground rose gradually until, all of a sudden, Mount Pharos jumped up and soared relentlessly skywards. It dominated the landscape for kilometres. Sometimes it seemed like there was nothing on Sotha but Mount Pharos. For 2/3 of its height, it was covered in the fuzzy green of Quicktree Forest. A band of shrubs and grasses extended above the tree line a few 100 metres more, to peter out in sheer cliffs of rock. The mountain was in the lower latitudes, where it was warm all year, but the summit was cold and bare. That it was reckoned a single mountain was due to its sole peak, but in truth, Mount Pharos was a great wall of a thing, 12 kilometres long, bracketing the plain around the Bay of Sothopolis in protective arms of basalt. It was so much bigger than its brothers and sisters of the Black Rock Range, and so far out from them, that it looked out of place, artificial almost. Mount Sotha was a giant anomaly hiding an enigma.
"That's it. What a genius I am," thought Mericus, mocking himself at framing it so.
But there was little natural about Mount Pharos. Apertures opened all over it, from holes the size of a man's fist to gaping caverns that would accommodate a battle tank. They were important, apparently, and one of the duties of the colony was cutting back the undergrowth around the cave mouths. A never-ending task. So then trees grew fast. There was an organic uniformity to the holes, like the internal structures of a living being, and where they punctured the surface, the warm grey stone of the mountain became a glossy, vitreous black. There was a smaller cave up there, right at the top, hidden by a huge rib of rock that leaned outward from the mountain. A landing pad perched precariously on the end of this promontory, while beside it a funicular railway ran from the base of the mountain all the way to the top. On the black crags of the summit, a fortification perched. Ostensibly, it was an observatory, but it was built by the Legiones Astartes and so was more redoubt than research station. Mericus had preferred the mountain the way it had been, without keep, railway or landing pad. No one would ever suggest that the mountain had a personality, but the colonists attributed their feelings of well-being to the peak. Sticking a big castle on the top seemed an affront. Merricus rested his pack and his lasgun against the chain-link fence around that final empty lot. There, Sothopolis stopped, and the Agricolum began. It was as clean as the line on the map it undoubtedly had been planned upon. The city Agricolum occupied the remainder of the plain between sea and mountain. This was also new, established to feed the legionaries garrisoning the planet. Circles of crops stretched off in ordered rows, divided by dead straight gravel tracks that shimmered in the heat. Each field had an automated drip-feed irrigation rig at the centre, their long arms driven by the sun. The fields framed Sothopolis with a patchwork of gentle Terran colours, crops as ancient as mankind and dragged across the stars with them. The Agricolum was far more extensive than the city, for all that the fields did not stretch far. At the first risings of the mountain, the browns and yellows of earthly plants stopped. There the Ægida Castellum stood watch over the city, and the bright blue-green of Sotha's vigorous native vegetation took over. Pretty as a picture, thought Merricus, breathing deeply of the fragrant morning air. He was content. Today he was not going to the fields or the forests. Today he was on military rotation, and he liked military rotation. Avians screeched in profusion over the cliffs where the mountain met the sea. A lighter grumbled up from the tiny spaceport. Merricus tracked the craft as it climbed above the height of the mountain towards the glint of the orbital. Day or night, the legionary base gleamed reassuringly up there, locked in a geosynchronous orbit over Sothopolis. By any objective definition, Sotha was a paradise. The 900 families that serviced the outpost lived like kings. They had plenty of space, a gentle world, they ate fresh food. Their work was respected by the Legion, their children grew up healthy and strong, and there was a pleasing lack of things trying to kill them. What more could a man ask for? Sighed Merricus, contentedly. It wouldn't last, he could see that. Things were changing. Until a couple of years ago, most of the colony had lived in rough hamlets on the lower mountain slopes. Sothopolis had been a three-block street. The Agriculum had been a forest broken up by slash-and-burn fields. If the weed-grown lots that made up two-thirds of Sothopolis looked like over-planning, they were not. Nothing was needlessly built in the 500 worlds. One day, the planet's restricted status would be lifted, colonists from overcrowded worlds would flood there, and the Sothan's simple pastoral culture would be swept away. For a while, the newcomers would enjoy Sotha's near-pristine nature, before smirching it with their lives. Man always brought his poisons with him. He couldn't help it. It was in his nature. Not even Rabute Gilliman could prevent that. Merricus counted his blessings. For the moment, Sotha only occasionally took new people. The colony was small and could not quite sustain its numbers, and 10 places had come up because of a shortfall in births. Sotha's calm atmosphere seemed to put a brake on humanity's overwhelming desire to multiply. Perhaps there were concerns about the genetic diversity of such a small group. Whatever the reason, Merricus had lucked out. Those sent to Sotha had been chosen from colonial applicants all over Ultramar. Merricus didn't deserve it. He really didn't. He was named for a mighty nation of old Earth, so his father had confided in him in a rare moment of friendliness. Merricus didn't believe he lived up to it. If he knew one thing, he knew himself, and he was unstintingly honest in his appraisal. He had been many things, none of them exactly honourable, a gambler, a rogue. If he was not a thief, then he had come pretty damn close a few times. He was a little bit unreliable, a little bit insolent, a little bit too free with his affections. Nothing very bad, but not exactly the picture of upright Ultramarian morality either. 7 years ago, after some bad business on Cliestro, the aftermath of which he had barely survived, he had decided to ship out to the frontier and make a new start. He had not in his wildest dreams expected a posting to somewhere like Sotha. An 8-wheeled, high-cabbed loader rumbled by, its long bed piled with quick-tree trunks from the logging camps. He flapped the dust it kicked up away from his face. He checked his chronometer. If he left now, he would be on time for the rendezvous, more or less. He waited a few minutes more, because there was something he wanted to see, and right there was one of the best places to see it. The sun crept higher in the sky. The light struck the mountain's peak just so. One by one, the dark, forbidding caverns honeycombing Mount Forrest's surface lit up with rich, liquid light. No sound came with the mountain's welcome to each new sunrise, but Mericus thought of it as a song. The effect that had earned Mount Pharos its name lasted less than half a minute, but in that time, Sothopolis's gentle rhythms stopped as all eyes went to the mountain. The amber light blinked out of each cave with a series of brilliant flashes, starting at the bottom, finishing with a last below the new fortress observatory. The caves returned to their dark, blank state. Mericus smiled broadly. Time to go. He hitched his rucksack onto his back, adjusted his helmet so it hung comfortably on his front, pulled a pair of non-regulation dark glasses out of a pouch on the webbing, and shouldered his lasgun. Sotha was a paradise, all right, but its days were numbered. War gripped the heavens. One only had to look upwards, where space-time writhed beyond the perfect blue sky of Sotha's day. At night, the heavens glowed, and the stars were blotted out. On the worst nights, sinuous, eye-watering patterns of unnatural colour tormented the soul. At night, under the dread aurorae, the calming effect of the mountain vanished. Mericus's dreams had grown dark of late. The Southern First were scattered either side of a trail of beaten earth atop the south ridge, leading through stands of young quick trees so thick you couldn't put an arm between them. Tiny Jono was the first to spot Mericus coming up the path from the plains.
Hey, everyone. Sergeant Giraldus is here. That's all of us. Can we finally get going now? Shouted Jono. Where have you been? Asked Trooper Hasquin.
He was sitting close to Tiny, tossing his knife into the earth, retrieving it, wiping it, and tossing it again.
Travelling, said Mericus. Am I not a traveller, wending my way along the journey of life like the rest of you worthy crew? Are we all not travellers? Got lost in a bush, more like, grumbled Chelvin Quintus,
a tall, bulky man whose hands were never free of field dirt. His hips were bulky with pouches the size of saddlebags, each one housing a heavy bolter clip. Dorican, the weapon's gunner, sat a few metres from his friend, rubbing gun oil into the squad's massive heavy weapon with his similarly massive hands.
How could I possibly get lost? Said Mericus.
Chelvin kicked at the dense brush around the clearing.
Damn trees are up already. 4 months back I was on forestry rotation cutting them down right here, and here they are again, higher than our heads. Quick tree scrub all looks the same. Easy to get lost, and you aren't from here.
Easy for you, maybe.
Chelvin, so them born or not, my sense of direction is much better than yours. I got the omnibus as far as the Via Ultima Agrorum and walked the field roads.
He let his rucksack slip to the ground, then his rifle. He interlaced his hands, pushed his palms out, and stretched his back with audible pleasure.
The reason I am late is that it is such a glorious day, and I took my time.
The others laughed. There were 30 of them in the auxiliary platoon, divided into 3 squads of 10. Mericus was well liked. Lieutenant Vitellius looked up at the commotion from where he was deep in consultation with his other 2 sergeants. He caught Mericus's eye and scowled.
I see the lieutenant's seen you, said Jono.
Sergeant Giraldus, get yourself up here.
Mericus's squad made a series of catty oohs.
Now, boys, show some respect to our bold leader.
Mericus walked the trail, stepping over the outstretched legs of men chatting easily in the sun. There was only a token auxiliary presence on Sotha, and so each Sothan male was expected to spend 1/3 of the year under arms. Military service came easily to the Sothans, many of whom spent months alone in the forests and mountain pastures, herding flocks of quarians.
Governisk, Balorian,
said Mericus to the sergeants with Vitellius.
Where by terror have you been?
And good day to you, Lieutenant Vitellius. Rendezvous was 0630, Mericus. 0630.
Mericus lifted his chronometer to his eyes.
And now it is 06:38. Julio, come on. I was 4 minutes late.
Damn it, Mericus. Use the proper protocol when we're out on duty, said Vitellius.
Grouchy today, sir?
Well, he patted his backpack.
My squad is ready.
I shall have you up on charges. I shall have you flogged for this.
Mericus raised an eyebrow. Vitellius had the decency to look abashed.
Look, it's well within my power. Don't push me.
I don't think your darling Sarah would approve of such an action.
Vitellius's face twisted in annoyance.
Don't exploit our friendship. You're killing any sense of discipline. Help me here, please. Just don't be late again,
Vitellius said, stalking off to the head of the column.
And get your section in order.
As you command, said Mericus. We march for Macragge.
He turned back down the trail and hollered at his troop.
You heard the man. Up, up, everyone. We have a long walk ahead of us.
His men stood up, yawning in the hot sun.
I think he's yearning for his regular units again, Mericus.
The time has come once more to call me Sergeant, Jono.
I think he's yearning for his regular units again, Sarge, said Jono.
That'll do, said Mericus.
Well now, that's the problem with training the likes of us. We all know everyone. Even Vitellius is part of the community now. How are they supposed to maintain any sort of order?
Remember when he arrived? What he was like when they sent him down from the Castellum? He would have whipped you then, said Jono.
Maybe he would, said Mericus. He's a good man, though. Better than me.
I hate troop rotation, said Chelvin. I don't see why they don't get more soldier boys in. Let us do the work we're best suited to.
Mericus draped a comradely arm around Chelvin's neck.
Because, dear Chelvin, this place is supposed to be a big secret. You know what restricted means? Sarge,
it means, said Mericus, that they don't want a lot of curious types poking their noses into what's going on here. He nodded up to the mountain.
A bunch of soldiers won't help that, will it? How do you keep their mouths shut if you transfer them elsewhere? If you keep them here, how do you accommodate the swelling population when you ship new blood in to replace the old farts every man sadly yet inevitably becomes? Our lord and master on Macragge is keeping this place manageable and simple, and that means...
He slapped Chelvin on the back.
Well, that means you, friend.
Chelvin scowled back.
Oh, I still hate it, he grumbled. Pointless waste of time.
You're on your own there, laughed Morio, the youngest of them all.
I love it.
Better this than scything back the bush on such a day.
And if it weren't for us, there would be more regular army units here. The harvest would never be brought in, said Mericus.
Why not? Said Chelvin.
Because, my small brain friend, we'd be chasing soldiers off our daughters. Lucky for us, there's only a few of them up in that fort, said Mericus.
You don't have any daughters, Sergeant, said Jono.
It's rather you were chasing off our daughters, said Pontian, a dark-haired man with a serious face.
Mericus affected to look hurt.
Daughters? Please, I'm a gentleman, he grinned.
It's your wives you have to worry about.
He looked at his 9 lads, all of them tanned, wiry, southern men. It was a testimony to the easygoing nature of the place how they'd accepted Mericus and his authority over them.
Come on, in line, boys. We're ready to go. Jono, alias, you're taking the first shift helping Dorican and Shelvin carry Domitia.
Jono and alias groaned and went to stand by the heavy bolter.
Oh, she's really heavy, Sarge, said Jono. I've the best eyes. Send me up front.
There'll be nothing to see until we hit the mountain. It is heavy, yes, and that's why you're helping to carry it, he said. Now, shush.
30 soldiers and their leaders fell into line, packs on their backs and lasguns at the ready. In that moment, they went from a village outing to a proper military outfit. It was remarkable, thought Mericus.
Patrol!
shouted Vitellius.
Prepare to move out!
Where to? Said Hasquin. The question was a ritual in Mericus's squad, as were the replies.
Round the mountain, up the mountain, then back home again, sang out Jono.
Why do they make us sleep in a barracks when our own beds are only down the bloody hill?
Said Dorican, his voice deeper than the rest.
Because this week we're in the army, all replied. Southern First Irregular Auxilia, shouted Vitellius. Ho, 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 Southern First, they all replied. Prepare to move out, said Vitellius.
Jono, Aelius, Chalvan and Dorican bent to the carrying handles on the heavy bolter. As they lifted it, Dorican used his free hand to slap the bipod into the stowed position.
So then first, move out, shouted Vitellius.
The column began a slow march up the ridge towards the mountain, winding its way through stands of rapidly regenerating trees.
And so we go, off for another walk in the sunshine, carrying a lasgun, said Mericus contentedly.
If only it were a wineskin, eh, Sarge?
By the Emperor, beloved by all, aye to that, Tiny, aye to that.